Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT, a weekly conversation with people who are shaping the technology landscape. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Albert Hitchcock to the broadcast. Albert is the Chief Operating and Technology Officer at Pearson, the 174-year-old, $4.5 billion British education and publishing company. In this role, Albert has been responsible for overseeing the company's multi-step digital transformation, as well as procurement, supply chain, customer service, and real estate. Prior to joining Pearson, Albert was the Group Chief Information Officer at Vodafone, and prior to that, the Chief Information Officer of Nortel Networks. Albert received his Bachelor of Science degree in Electronic Engineering at South Devon College of Arts and Technology, and his MBA from Exeter University. I recently caught up with Albert by phone from his office in London, and our conversation covered world-class IT Principle 1, people, as Albert discussed the skills revolution taking place in the workplace and Pearson's focus on meeting this need with internal employee development. Principle 2, infrastructure, as he discussed Pearson's digital transformation centered around switching to a single platform for users and transitioning the data centers to the public cloud. Principle 4, IT and business partnerships, as he discussed how Pearson is building AI and machine learning capabilities to transform all aspects of the business. We also discussed the evolution of the CIO role, how Pearson looks to other companies to assist in innovation, the power of augmented and virtual reality, and a variety of other topics. If you like what you hear, we'd be grateful if you give us a rating on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. Thank you. The Forum on World-Class IT is brought to you by Transmit Security. Transmit Security designs and develops platforms that address problems in security and usability by making it easy for developers to implement advanced authentication techniques ranging from biometrics to behavioral profiling. As the risk of cyber attacks and hacks increase, companies need a more effective way of preventing unauthorized access. I recently caught up with the Transmit Security CEO, Mickey Budai. This week, Mickey provides his top tips for legacy companies struggling with the management of in-house legacy systems.
The first one I call legacy. I'm seeing quite a few large enterprises struggling today with legacy in-house developed systems. These are systems that were developed 10 years ago, sometimes 20 years ago. They're extremely hard to maintain. They were developed using technologies that are no longer supported and require skills that are relatively hard to get today. Many of these legacy systems are core strategic systems and as such are connected to many other systems and processes in the organization. And replacing them is almost impossible. Data migration is a nightmare. Redoing all the interfaces is a nightmare. Even identifying the interfaces is very complex. On the other end, I'm seeing large enterprises today rushing into what I call do-it-yourself large-scale development projects of very similar systems. These projects are basically the legacy systems of the future. In terms of 10 years from now, CIOs are going to face the very same problem they are facing today with their legacy in-house developed systems. I think that as an enterprise, you need an extremely good reason to adopt a do-it-yourself over a buy decision. Your architects may tell you that they can build it, but no matter how much you try, you won't be able to estimate the total cost of the project over the next 10 years, nor the time it's going to take you to complete the task. My suggestion is to focus your development efforts on building interfaces to all your existing systems so you can more easily plug in new services. Don't focus your efforts on building the legacy of the future.
Tune in next week when Mickey discusses the value of abstraction layers. Hitchcock, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT.
Thank you, Peter. Good to be here.
It's a pleasure to speak with you. Albert, I thought we'd begin with your role. You are the Chief Operating Officer, also the Chief Technology Officer of Pearson. These are responsibilities you took on at the company in 2016 after 2 years prior to that as the company's Chief Information Officer. And I wonder if you could, first and foremost, talk about your current purview, but also talk about why the change and also what changed between the role as CIO and now your current set of responsibilities.
Yes, thank you, Peter, and it's good to be here. So, yeah, first of all, I've been with Pearson a little over 4 years now, having previously joined from Vodafone Group, where I was the Group Chief Information Officer, and I was with Vodafone for 7 years in a very global role around the world. And I joined Pearson. I was really interested in the mission of Pearson and the agenda it had to really transform education through the digital medium. And so I joined the company, as you say, as the CIO, and took on the responsibility to really look about how we transform the company into a truly digital company. And it was interesting that I was sort of, one of my first roles was to really, have a look across the business and see how the business was operating and to sort of see how we could implement technology to both streamline the way the company ran, but also, how we served our customers. And what became very clear very quickly was the need to radically simplify both the underlying technology, but also the way the company ran, all of its operational processes, and also how we sort of delivered a very sort of competitive digital experience to our consumers and our institutional customers. And through that process, I guess one of the things that became evident was that large, chunks of the company, if not the whole company, needed to go through a radical change process. And so I was asked to take on additional responsibilities through that, both in terms of taking on, first of all, actually the digital product development, because it became very clear that the enterprise IT and the way we're developing digital products needed to be very closely aligned. And previously in the business, these two were separate, almost competing technology functions. And so there was a belief on my part that we needed to have an underlying design, a digital architecture, a way of working that was compatible across both the enterprise IT and then the product development. So that group was one of the first groups to sort of come in addition to my existing CIO role. And then about a year later, one of the things we embarked upon, through this process was a sort of implementation of a common ERP system, common CRM, common operations processes, and common data, customer data, product data, vendor data. And we didn't at that time have a single operations function across the company. So operations tended to be embedded in our regional organizations and other functions around the business. And it became very clear that in order to drive sort of process alignment, commonality in ways of working, and also to drive to a common data model, we needed to bring those functions together. So I sort of offered to take on the operations responsibilities, that being sort of procurement, supply chain, customer service, actually real estate was under there as well, and to drive sort of a common model around the globe for operations. And so that's how I took on that responsibility, and subsequently I've actually added in additional shared services as well. So these functions all coming together have sort of allowed us to sort of drive a more cohesive change agenda across the business, and to do that in a rapid time frame. So that was the sort of the rationale for it.
That's very interesting. And to what extent do you see, as you mentioned, you are a CIO multiple times over at Nortel Networks prior to your time at Vodafone, as well as at Pearson, as I mentioned a moment ago. And to what extent do you see, and I think I hear a little bit of this in your response, do you see the work done more broadly as a continuation of what CIOs themselves ought to be doing in sort of setting standards, in, of course, thinking about internal and external components of digital transformation and so forth? Do you see that as sort of carrying forward with this broader set of responsibilities that you've undertaken?
Well, absolutely, I do. And I think, certainly my perspective in as I've taken on additional roles, both with Vodafone and now with Pearson, is the role that technology performs in truly, making companies competitive and compatible with the sort of the future expectations of consumers. And so I think increasingly the CIO has moved from the back office to the front office in many ways. And in fact, I think the CIO role, particularly where that role enables the delivery of experience. I know some companies have implemented a chief digital officer and so forth. That's for a slightly separate topic. But I think in my view, the head of technology that owns the digital agenda really has a transformative role in the company and needs to think wider than pure tech. I think the role is a transformation role, so it needs to encompass you know, the operating model of the business, the way the company operates, the processes that it needs to perform, how it delivers, you know, a customer experience that's preeminent and comparable to the best digital experiences across any sector, quite frankly. I think we're increasingly consumers are, you know, comparing us with their best digital experiences, irrespective of the service that's being consumed. So I think my role and roles in organizations that lead technology need to think through the whole customer life cycle, need to think through the effectiveness and performance of the operational aspects of company performance. And so, yeah, I think it's an important role and a transformative role, and one that's sort of pretty wide encompassing to be truly effective.
Mm. You've described the vision of delivering Pearson's education content and services through a single platform as creating the quote-unquote Netflix of education, Albert. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about this kind of this long-term vision, how that translation works, and really your vision for this.
Yeah, I mean, I sort of, you know, coined that analogy, I think, probably about 2 years ago now. And actually, you know, whether you say the Netflix for education or the Spotify for education, or, you know, there's a number of analogies out there. The message was really, the intention of the message was to convey a viewpoint that we needed to move to a platform type of model, where we have all of our products and services and capabilities that we deliver to all of our customers through a single ecosystem, effectively. So, you know, a lot has been written around the platform model. In Pearson, that's especially relevant insofar as, you know, our company grew through acquisition. It was a very diverse business, actually over 170 years old company that had many different types of companies under the umbrella of Pearson for many years. Of course, in recent years, has doubled down into education being the primary focus. But nevertheless, that complexity that was acquired over those decades was inherent within the company. And so the way we serve our customers, you know, had been across many different brands, many different types of digital product. Of course, we sell, as you know, millions of books, but I'm talking merely about the digital side here for a second. How do we transform that to be consistent branded experience, a high-quality experience, one that's comparable to the best consumer experiences out there? And so you immediately think, you know, West Coast platform types of companies that have, you know, created huge mind share, create the benchmark for digital experience in many ways. They are platform businesses. And the thought that actually education has an opportunity to be transformed along similar lines in terms of if we had a single platform globally that could deliver all of our educational content and courseware, particularly moving to more sort of a personalized experience that delivers high quality educational outcomes, proven efficacy. That's just sort of the vision here. So the comparator was, well, if we could create that single platform like Netflix, like Spotify, like Amazon, that is highly scalable, global in nature, high quality, and can deliver all of our experiences around the world to millions of learners, that's really a game changer, not only for Pearson, but for the industry. And so that is our vision. And we're delivering it. I mean, it's actually happening. We're delivering all the platforms, both what we call the Global Learning Platform, which is our new scalable platform for all of our content and courseware delivery, but also the sort of highly scalable enterprise platforms that transform our business to become much more like a platform business, deliver the cost efficiencies, the scalabilities, the adaptability, the ability to innovate fast and at scale, the ability to create an agile development model, the ability to partner and create new ecosystems with business customers, institutional, educational institutional customers, and importantly, very importantly, the end consumer. So, you know, our ability to deliver high quality courses to students that are proven to help them learn and progress their lives through education, ultimately into professional life and through their work. That's sort of what we're trying to do. So yeah, so quite a long answer to why the Netflix for education, but it's that sort of platform moving to sort of ecosystem play for education.
It makes a lot of sense, Albert. And one of the things that strikes me as you talk about this transformation, it's a lot of change, certainly. You've talked about some of the cultural or people practice changes that are necessary. You've talked about some processes. You referenced Agile, for instance. And naturally, there must be a tremendous amount of technology and infrastructure change that's necessary to bring this to life. And I wonder, you know, how have you thought about the waves of change that you incorporate in in order to breathe life into this vision?
No, it's a really good point. And actually, some of those phases have become evident as we've gone through the cycle here. So, you know, as I said, in my first few months of joining Pearson, it became clear that we need to do this radical simplification. And, you know, and I mentioned a minute ago that, you know, Pearson grew through acquisition. So nothing had ever been fully integrated. So we had, you know, 63 ERP systems across the company, over 3,000 applications, 93 data centers, extremely complex, you know, vendor landscape. Pretty much every technology vendor was in here somewhere. And then, you know, massive duplication. So 40 versions of Salesforce.com were used in the business. So the first phase was what I call a sort of a radical simplification and reduction phase, you know, understanding our cost base, how do we radically address costs, take out complexity, reduce duplication. The next phase was a sort of what I call platform strategy. So implement common core platforms across the company. So single ERP on Oracle in the cloud, single Salesforce CRM in the cloud, single identity platform in the cloud, new content, publishing, editorial, authoring systems, content distribution in the cloud, radical move into public cloud, decommissioning of data centers. We started out with 93, we're down to less than 30. Plan in the next 3 years is to shut them all off. So we'll have everything in the public cloud. We're going to move from, we moved from 3,000 apps at the starting point to about 1,000 today. We're going to go to less than 300, every one of them in the cloud. So either SaaS or cloud hosted. Our global learning platform is in the cloud on microservices. So that's sort of phase two, which is sort of implement the platform. Phase we're just going into right now is what I call exploitation. So it's how do we move from implementation of platforms into exploitation of platforms and technology. So this is the bit when we start to innovate at scale, bring a truly eminent customer experience together across the whole enterprise. So how do we track customer behavior? How do we track insights around customers? How do we personalize experiences? How do we, you know, link our marketing to our customer service, to our product experiences? And so instrumenting the whole enterprise, focus on customer data, customer experience, and also how do we really move to best-in-class operational processes to run the company? So how do we become really efficient, take out costs, streamline operations? So radical change. And along with that exploitation phase is a real big dependency on people and culture. So how do we, you know, attract the new talent we need to run this new digital business? How do we develop our existing great people to go to the next level? How do we change the culture from our traditional publishing culture to a digital native culture? And, you know, what does that entail? That's the phase we're sort of going through right now. So I think that the next phase is actually really, really exciting and interesting because, if you like, we've laid a lot of the foundation stones. We've implemented a lot of the capability. Our single ERP is up. Our single CRM is up. All our new content ecosystem is performing. We're building our global learning platform. We have one of the first products we launched on that this month. So it's now really exciting. And I think this whole focus on culture and change and innovation, exploitation, the next few years are going to be really exciting at Pearson.
That's very, very interesting to hear the way in which you've rolled that out. Thank you for that great overview. I wonder also, clearly some of the new technologies, and I know from our past conversations, you've talked about the leveraging emerging technologies like AI, machine learning, virtual and augmented reality, these sorts of things into the offering to a greater extent. And I'd like to get into some of the specifics of that in a moment. But before doing that, I'm also curious, just the process of experimentation. How is that done as new technologies emerge, as a thought is there that there may be an implication to the innovation on Pearson? How do you encourage your team to begin to experiment to decipher the more of the specifics of how that might be leveraged?
Yeah, it's a really good question, actually, because you know, one of my beliefs is actually that you don't necessarily have to invent everything in house, right? I think there's some great examples of innovation in both adjacent industries, but also maybe completely different companies that are doing interesting stuff. And just give you a very practical example of that. You know, we've been growing our team around the global learning platform because I didn't have the skills in the company to build microservice-based software or even cloud-based development. And so, you know, we thought, where can we get some folks that really understand that world? But also, where can we get some folks that really understand the sort of future education experience, which in a digital context is going to be highly interactive, highly immersive, exploiting, you know, sort of rich media and, you know, ultimately, as you say, AI, VR, AR, you know, to create this sort of future, you know, very highly immersive education experience. And I thought, well, actually, the games industry has some fairly close analogies to the sort of experiences we're going to be creating in the future. So we hired a product CTO, actually, in California from Electronic Arts. And he's brought a group of games guys with him, and they're located in our new San Francisco office down on California Street. And actually, the interesting thing is that, you know, just by bringing in a group of people who work in an adjacent industry that would have probably never connected with education, they're bringing in a whole new set of ideas, experiences, ways of working that are going to truly help us innovate, you know, the digital education experiences that we're working on right now. So that is, you know, probably not net new innovation, but it's about bringing together people who have diverse experiences in areas that can really be additive to what we're trying to do. So I think, in answer to your question, I think it's a combination of us looking at other things that other companies are doing. Where can we bring these things together to truly deliver with velocity the sort of things we're trying to do in Pearson? And then as we create the platform, the single platform, how do we then start thinking about, you know, future R&D and looking further forward, maybe so 5-year horizon? What are the things coming down the pipe that we could truly then bolt in to the platform to truly take us to the next level? And I think one of the obvious ones is artificial intelligence, which is real. It's on us today, of course, not 5 years out. It's happening today. You know, we've just hired a senior lady from Intel to help us to bring the whole AI area to focus in terms of what it's going to do for our business. And we're building AI and machine learning capability and technology in other parts of our company to really look at how we transform all aspects of our business using AI and machine learning. And that's everything from how we transform customer call centers using chatbots all the way through to ultimately, which is part of the sort of Pearson secret sauce here, which is how we bring AI and learning design and pedagogy and insight into human minds and brain function to create a truly personalized learning experience that would be different for every single human being potentially. So you can accelerate learning delivery, improve outcomes, and help everyone progress in their lives through learning. AI and content is at the center of that thinking. So, you know, we're working on that to bring that to scale as well through the platform. So those are a couple of thoughts for you. And then obviously augmented reality, virtual reality, going back to some of my games analogy, I think we see, you know, a number of use cases for that, not just within school and higher education, but actually into professional learning. You know, how could we help people who are working in hazardous jobs, you know, actually experience something without going through the hazard? How can we help surgeons, you know, learn how to perform operations on people without actually having to perform an operation? And we've done some work with Microsoft using HoloLens to actually simulate human surgery. So I think, you know, there's huge scope here for the future, and you know, the platform will allow us to do this at scale.
You know, as you talk about your vision of the future, as you talk about some of the really radical innovation that's happening in Pearson and beyond, leveraging new technology, it really underscores the pace of change and how it's faster than ever, if anything, getting faster. And how, you know, a theme I'm also hearing is hearing a lot in many conversations, and certainly something that you've been thinking about as in terms of bringing it to life, is fostering learning agility within for individuals, for enterprises, the people who work within companies, and especially given the fact that a skill that one has today may be rendered obsolete very quickly, it is incumbent upon us all to be lifelong learners. And it strikes me that you're really in the front seat in many ways in assessing, analyzing, and ultimately bringing to life the means by which people can do that. And I wonder, to what extent do you drink your own champagne, so to say, and ensure that your organization is, whether leveraging Pearson technology or tools, products, or others, are in fact doing the very same thing? How do you bring that back inside?
Yeah, and that's a great point. We recently, actually Pearson recently released a report with the Oxford Martin School on the sort of future of skills and learning in the workplace. And you know, one of the things we're really focused on is sort of the whole aspect of employability and you know, equipping students with the skills necessary for future employment and progression within employment. And one of the areas I think which is a big opportunity for Pearson is to increasingly serve education not just through school and further education, but increasingly into the workplace, and to work with employers as well, transform their workforce. And it's interesting, just sort of through my role, when I connect to, you know, our suppliers in the technology industry, when I talk to, you know, other CIOs or COOs in other companies, one of the things that's evident is that pretty much every company on the planet right now has the challenge of reskilling their workforce to cope with the demands of the digital revolution that we're going through, and the impact of AI and robotics and everything else. And I think, you know, Pearson is exceptionally well placed actually to help companies as well transform the skills that they need to acquire, the skills that they need to develop, and the ongoing development of employees at large. I think about my own profession. I started out as an engineer, and I became incorporated and then chartered through the Institute of Engineering and Technology. And, you know, an engineer is no different to a surgeon or different to an accountant, but the professions demand ongoing sort of development and certification. And I think people themselves want to continue the learning path. And so the opportunity is there for us to sort of truly become the delivery of lifelong learning for both individuals and to enable companies and educational institutions and governments to achieve that. As it relates to the second part of your question around, you know, how we do that internally, well, one of the things we do in Pearson is a big focus on internal employee development. We started a technology academy actually shortly after I joined to try and take the technology workforce to the next level in terms of their abilities, to equip them with the skills needed for our own journey here around sort of digital chain. That's something that we will continue to work on and continue to sponsor. And of course, we work very closely with institutions and universities to do that as well with their own people. So yeah, it's a fascinating journey here and incredibly important for society, as particularly over the next few years, I would say, as the society needs change and how we need to evolve to support the future digital requirements.
Exactly. And it's in fact, it's kind of interesting, in as much as some of the tech trends that we've been talking about are, many fear, of course, going to be the sources of loss of jobs as technology can take over more and more manual processes, you know, the entire families of jobs that people have traditionally undertaken. And clearly, of course, education is part of what will help our societies continue to evolve and ensure that those people, especially that will be impacted, whether it's in the near, medium, or long term, have the means by which that they can find good work in a new area. I assume that's a perspective you share. Is that right?
That's absolutely, yeah, absolutely, and incredibly important. As I mentioned a minute ago, I think a lot of businesses, a lot of companies, in fact, most companies right now, probably one of their biggest issues that's common and shared is this sort of re-equipping their workforce with the right skills for the future. And, you know, it is, I use the term revolution. I do think we're going to go through a skills revolution, you know, in the next few years. And it's going to be increasingly hard for companies to find the sort of people that they need to find. I think something like 40% of employers are saying they can't find the right people today. I think that's only going to get worse. And so the need to equip students for the workforce and to equip the workforce for the future is going to be something that's incredibly important and is very, very high on our agenda for our strategy going forward.
Well, Albert Hitchcock, thank you so much for joining me on the Forum on World Class IT. It's been a great conversation.
Thank you very much, Peter. Delighted to speak to you, and thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for listening to the Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please rate us on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. And please join me next week when my guest will be Sunil Gupta, the Edward W. Carter Professor at Harvard Business School and author of Driving Digital Strategy, A Guide to Reimagining Your Business. You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call MetaStrategy's Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to MetaStrategy's five principles of World Class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy-setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. And our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.